Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us. And it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show. So this week, I decided to do something a little bit different. I'm outside. I have my little portable microphone with me. And you probably figured out by now that on the previous episodes that I've done, when I've mentioned things like, I'm walking through the caves, or this sound effects. I wasn't actually in a cave. I live in Florida. Finding caves is pretty hard to do. But honest to goodness, 100%, I am walking around outside. I don't know if you can hear my footsteps. I am in Germany. I joined my wife on a trip. She has a work trip. And I am walking around a monastery on an island, which is kind of an interesting place to be. And before I get into all the details, I obviously am not continuing the analysis of The Hobbit this week, because I thought this was an opportunity to do something a little bit different. I'm going to be discussing Tolkien and everything I can come up with about Germany. As most of you know, he spent some time in World War I. We can discuss a little bit about that. But I found some details about the history of his name, where his name came from, which may have some German roots. And I think more interestingly, when he tried to get The Hobbit published in Germany in 1938, and some of the things that he had to deal with that. But for right now, for this intro, and who knows, I don't know how long this will go, I'm just kind of spitballing this week. I'm walking around this monastery. This is a 1,000-year-old location. The actual monastery itself has been rebuilt on a few occasions. But there are parts here that are very old. And I'm going to bring you along with me. We're going to see how well this comes out. I hope my voice doesn't sound terrible. I don't have my regular podcasting setup, so there's no intro music, and I'm not going to take a break in the middle. Thank you to all the patrons and everyone who supports the show and everybody who reviews. I'll be catching up with that stuff next week. But I wanted to bring you with me, and I'm going to be taking pictures. I'm actually right now I'm walking around taking pictures. I'll have those up on the Patreon, and they'll be available for even the free members. Anybody can take a look at those. I'm not going to gate that. But yeah, this is a morning. It's Friday morning for me. And the weather is cold, it is foggy, and it is brilliant. It is beautiful. We don't get days like this in Florida. There's a monastery here. There's a chapel. There are some locations that I've already taken pictures of. One is a little hole in the monastery where probably it was an abbot's private chapel at some point. You'll get to see pictures of that. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. So we'll have a quick little break. I'll be back in a minute, and we're going to go over some of the details that I teased about Tolkien and Germany. So don't go anywhere. All right, so here I am. I'm back in our room. I hope it's not too echoey in here. Also,
During this trip, I've picked up a little bit of a cold, so if my voice does sound a little bit weird because of that, I apologize. And I wanted, before I dive into this, I'm going to go into Tolkien's name, the origins of Tolkien, the actual word, and all of that. But I wanted to fill in a little bit of details here. You might be wondering, why am I at this monastery / hotel event center now in somewhere in Germany? Well, it all comes down to my wife does science research. She actually runs a lab. They study the effects of different, I don't know, chemicals and drugs and things on mouse brains in order to treat things like Alzheimer's disease. And they have these conferences they go to. And this one, this year, happens to be in Germany. And for the first time in many years, I've decided to come along with her. So we spent some time in Munich for a few days at the earlier part of this week. And now we've been kind of hanging out here. She's doing the conference stuff. And so I've been doing some research and taking some pictures. I hope you enjoy all the pictures that I'm putting up on the Patreon for this post. And also talking to all of you about everything I learned. And again, I hope everything sounds okay as I'm recording this. This is me attempting to do this all on the go. So hopefully everything works out. But let's talk about Tolkien. There's a few different things that have to do with Tolkien and Germany that I thought were interesting. First of all is his last name. His last name comes from, well, there's some confusion around it. He himself wasn't sure where his origins came from. He didn't really know his father very, very well. His father passed away when he was young. And so being a philologist and somebody who's interested in those things, he researched some things on his own. And here I am researching some things. And it turns out that there is a paper that was published called On J.R.R. Tolkien's Roots in Gdansk. This is by Rizard Durdzinski. I hope I'm pronouncing all of that correctly. And this was originally written in Polish in November of 2017. And this is a paper that goes into some research about Tolkien. And there's some sections here I'm going to go ahead and quote, because I'm sure this says it a lot better than I will if I were to try to re-say all of the things in this. But there's a section here that's titled The State of Research. The Tolkiens from England have been aware of their German ancestry. J.R.R. Tolkien himself, however, early isolated from the family of his prematurely deceased father, did not know where and how the Tolkiens had come from London in the 18th century. Now, remember, he was born in South Africa. So there's that distance, and he was part of an English family who eventually made their way back to England. But then having a name like Tolkien isn't a particularly English name, so I'm sure that would build some curiosity in the young man. It goes on and says, as a prominent linguist, he supported the view that his surname originated from the German adjective Tulkun, T-O-L-L-K-U with the umlaut over it, H-N. Rashbold or foolhardy. This is a name, I love this. This is a name that the origins meant somebody who was foolhardy, somebody who was rash and yet lucky at the same time. It makes me think of the Tooks, the Took family. It makes me think of Pippin. I wonder if he likened himself to Pippin in some ways. Interesting, right? Since early adolescence, Tolkien translated the surname of his favorite languages. And it goes on and details a bunch of these. Yet he knew the alternative Baltic etymology as well. That connects to the word Tolk, and I'm kind of summarizing this, which comes from a Low Prussian. Prussian is now a word that doesn't get used as often. When you think Prussia, think Poland. And this would be like the northeastern side of Poland. Baltic Prussian, and then it goes into all these other tenses and things. In 1973, he expressed his astonishment at this. In Humphrey Carpenter's biography of J.R.R. Tolkien, a certain family legend had been mentioned. And this is a quote within my quote right here. Opinion differed among the Tolkiens as to why and when their ancestors had come to England. The more prosaic said it was in 1756 to escape the Prussian invasion of Saxony, where they had lands. The Saxon descent seems to have been particularly attractive for J.R.R. Tolkien. It was the Germanic tribes of Saxons that inhabited Britain and created the Old English language and culture, for which Professor Tolkien was a hobby and field study and did research. During this so-called migration period, together with Angles, Jutes, and Frisians, the important quotations from Tolkien's inaugural speech from 1955 entitled English and Welsh and published in The Monsters and the Critics says a lot of what Saxony he might have meant. And then he is quoted as saying, "I am not a German, though my surname is German, anglicized, like Serdic. I have inherited from my surname nothing that originally belonged to it in language or culture, and after 300 years of, quote, blood of Saxony and Poland is probably a negligible physical ingredient." Now, Ryszard Dierdzinski's paper goes on and goes into greater depth about some other things as well, which I'm not going to cover in this episode. But there is another theory. In fact, there are a number of other theories. It says here in the Wikipedia article, "A number of other theories on the meaning of the name have been proposed, including that it is derived from the village of Tolkinen in East Prussia. J.R.R. Tolkien suggested that the name was derived from the German adjective Tolkun, like we talked about before, meaning foolhardy. Several people with the surname Tolkien or similar spelling, some of them members of the same family as J.R.R. Tolkien, live in northern Germany, but most of them are descendants of recent refugees from East Prussia who fled the Red Army invasion in 1945. J.R.R. Tolkien's own knowledge of the family history was limited to the 18th century Germanic origin. So I find it interesting, right? Like, where do all our names come from? I have a general sense of where my last name comes from, but yet I don't have a firm connection to, I believe it's Scottish, actually, the Scottish ancestry on that side of my family. And I feel like Tolkien probably was dealing with something very similar. A name that comes from a certain place, it may have meant something like foolhardy at one point, or the location of a village. So there you go, some connections to Germany here, and there are definitely some other things we can talk about. We can talk about his service in World War I, where he served on the battlefield of the Somme. And I know that's not in Germany, but he was fighting the Germans at the time. And then there's also the story of trying to get The Hobbit published in 1938, when, of course, the Nazis were rising in power, and they pushed back on it. On him a little bit because they were wondering about his ancestry. But we'll get to that at the end. First, I want to talk a little bit about his service during World War I. We've talked about this before on the show, and it comes up fairly often because he was very influenced by his time there. I found this article. This is on greatwar.nl. There's obviously multiple things on this website, but there is an article that's called Frodo and the Marshes of the Great War by Nick von Holstein and Rob Rugenberg. And I'm going to quote some of, we'll read through some of this and discuss it as we go, because it gives a very detailed synopsis of his time in World War I as a young man. It starts off and says, "In a BBC television documentary, Priscilla Tolkien, daughter of the late J.R.R. Tolkien, spoke about her supposition that the journey through the Dead Marshes in The Lord of the Rings was in fact a description of the experiences her father had in the Great War. During the First World War, John Ronald Raoul Tolkien was a second lieutenant in the 11th Lancashire Fusiliers." I think that's how you pronounce that. "He had learned Morse code and used the signal rockets and field telephones, and he served in action as battalion signaling officer." And I love the detail here that even at this early stage of his life, he was somebody who picked up Morse code and was basically communicating using a learned language of the time in order to help in the war. "In June of 1916, he was sent to the Somme." I'm sorry, did I say Sione? I said Sione. I'm near Sione, Germany. The Somme is an area in France. Sorry, I goofed that. Too many foreign words are crowding my brain. So he served in the Somme area in France to participate in the great offensive that was to start on the 1st of July. But in the first weeks of this terrible battle, Tolkien's battalion stayed in reserve, safely behind the front line in the village of Buzancourt, I think is probably how that's pronounced. Tolkien's first experience on the front came on Friday, the 14th of July, when an unsuccessful attack on the village of Auvillers, I believe is how that's pronounced, British gunfire should have destroyed the barbed wire defenses in front of the German trenches, but it had not. As the men found out when they crawled and run toward the German lines, many of his battalion were killed by machine gun fire. After 48 hours of carnage, followed by 24 hours in a dugout, Tolkien's unit was relieved. Can you imagine that? 3 days. When he returned to his hut in Buzancourt, he found a letter telling him that Rob Gilson, one of his dearest friends, had been hit by a shell. Lieutenant Gilson had been in action on the 1st of July near Baycourt, not far from where Tolkien stayed. The letter he was sent was from another close friend, Lieutenant Joffrey Smith. And these letters are so interesting because they give us such insight into the way these young men would talk to each other. He writes, "My dear John Ronald, I saw in the paper this morning that Rob has been killed. I am safe, but what does that matter? Do please stick to me, you and Christopher. I am very tired and most frightfully depressed of this worst news. Now one realizes in despair what the TCBS really was. Oh, my dear John Ronald, whatever are we going to do? Yours ever, Jeffrey B. Smith." Now, the TCBS stood for the Tea Club and Barovian Society. This was like an official name to a friend group that they had started in 1911. Tolkien and his three closest friends, who all had moved on to school. They'd gone to university in different universities, but they had stayed in touch. This was their close-knit friends group and their way of, I guess, defining themselves as something more than just individuals and just as friends. It says here, "The boys shared a great interest in ancient languages, philosophy, literature, natural sciences, mathematics, arts, and music. An intense friendship had developed between the four, and although they went to different universities, they continued to meet each other. All four had joined the army, though they served in separate units. Tolkien wrote back to Joffrey, 'I do not feel a member of a complete body now. I honestly feel that the TCBS has ended.' In the next weeks, Tolkien participated in at least one of the disastrous stormings of the Schwaben Redoubt, an impregnable fortification off the German trenches. Again, there were heavy losses in his battalion. From then on, he served on and off in the trenches." So you can imagine serving in World War I, which was terrible enough, but being in the battle, in the trenches, in those early days. Now, he kept a notebook. In his spare time off duty, in the barracks behind the front, and often disturbed by music from gramophones, as he would later say, Tolkien started writing in a notebook, the beginning of a mythology that he initially called the Book of Lost Tales. This is the actual origins of everything that he wrote afterwards. The Silmarillion was founded on these writings. And then, of course, eventually, The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. It also says here, "In those months, death was omnipresent. Bodies of the British and German soldiers lay unburied, stinking and rotting around him in no man's land. Writing became, for Tolkien, a way to deal with this brutality and barbarity around him. He wrote whenever he found an opportunity, in huts filled with blasphemy and smut," and this is a quote, "or by candlelight in bell tents, even down in dugouts under shell fire." In a letter to his son Christopher many years later, he explained, "I look to escapism, or really transforming experience into another form and symbol with Morgoth and orcs and the Audulai, representing beauty and grace of life and artifact, and so on. And it has stood me in good stead in many hard years since, and I still draw on the concepts then hammered out." Now, these experiences people have talked about obviously were things that he pulled from when describing the battlefields of Middle-earth or the desolation of places like Mordor. But they also informed his perspectives on people and individuals. It says here, "For instance, in The Lord of the Rings, Sam witnesses the death of a Haradrim soldier and realizes how much the enemy looks like himself. The quote from the book says, It was Sam's first view of a battle of men against men, and he did not like it much. He was glad that he could not see the dead face. He wondered what the man's name was, and where he came from, and if he was really evil at heart, or what lies or threats had led him on the long march from his home, and if he would not really rather have stayed there in peace. And then the war continued on, and although many of his companions didn't make it, he was unharmed until he fell ill in October of 1916. He developed trench fever, and this was a disease. This was something that was spread from these bugs that would get in your clothes, and they would pass from man to man, because you can imagine in the trenches, it's not like you could go bathe or take a shower. And so this disease would pass from one to another, and the disease was characterized by fever and headaches, sore bones and muscles and joints, and then skin lesions on the chest and back. And because it hit Tolkien, he was taken off the front line and he was sent back to a hospital. It says, first Tolkien was taken to a hospital in Le Touquet, behind the front. A week later, when his condition worsened, he was shipped to England. On the 9th of November, he arrived in a hospital in Birmingham, the city he had lived in during his youth. Now, all of this seems very tragic, but it turns out that much later on, while he is still in hospital, the rest of his battalion either is wiped out or taken prisoner at an offensive movement they did later on. And had he not been off the front lines in the hospital, he may not have survived. So, in some ways, it was beneficial. Now, there is another letter that he received on December 1916 while he was still in the hospital. And it was from one of his other reading club friends, Geoffrey Smith. Or Geoffrey, maybe it's Geoffrey Smith. I think I said Geoffrey earlier. My dear friend, John Ronald, my chief consolation is that if I am scuppered tonight, I am off on duty in a few minutes, there will still be left a member of the great TCBS to voice what I dreamed and what we all agreed upon. For the death of one of its members cannot, I am determined, dissolve the TCBS. Death can make us loathsome and helpless as individuals, but it cannot put an end to the Immortal Four, a discovery I am going to communicate to Rob before I go off tonight. And do you write it also to Christopher? May God bless you, my dear John Ronald, and may you say things I have tried to say long after I am not here to say them, if such be my lot. Yours ever, Geoffrey B. Smith. Now, this is all very tragic, because the very next paragraph says, when Tolkien got this letter, his friend was already dead. Geoffrey Smith served with the 19th Battalion of the Lancashire Fusiliers. On the 29th of November, 1916, the battalion was shelled near the village of Soustra on the road from Doolins to Arras. Geoffrey was seriously injured by a shrapnel hit in on a thigh and his right arm. In the next days, he developed gangrene. On the 3rd of December, at 3:30 in the morning, he died. The next month, January 1917, Tolkien reported himself fit for orders, but soon he became sick again. His service record files are largely concerned with the various health problems that dominated his time in the Army. There are numerous reports made by Army medical boards between December 1916 and September 1918 on Tolkien's recovery from trench fever, a slow process punctuated by relapses. Periods of remission enabled him to do home service at various camps sufficiently well to be promoted to full lieutenant, but he never returned to the front. Now, Tolkien ended up as the last of that group of friends. He's the only one who made it out alive. And maybe it's because he picked up a disease that was recurring and difficult enough to survive after 2 years that it kept him from going back to the front line. And as I mentioned earlier, characters were influenced by this as well. Sam, in particular, there's a quote from him that says, My Sam Gamgee is indeed a reflection of the English soldier, of the privates and batmen I knew in the 1914 war and recognized as so far superior to myself. All of this is so touching when you think about it. So there you go. That's Tolkien's time in World War I, fighting against the Germans at the time. So I teased it earlier. We need to talk about Tolkien trying to get The Hobbit published in Germany in 1938. And it wasn't for like another two decades until it actually was published and translated to German. And of course, when you're somebody who serves in World War I against the Germans of that day, and then again was an Englishman during the events of World War II and the rise of the Nazi Party, you wouldn't have particularly good feelings about the Nazis. Now, he had a lot of respect for German history, the language. From all accounts, he was clearly somebody who understood many different languages, but he actually could speak German fairly well. And there's this wonderful story about trying to get The Hobbit published. This the part I'm going to quote here comes from lithub.com. There's an article titled, this is great, "On the Time J.R.R. Tolkien Refused to Work with Nazi-Leaning Publishers." And we're going to skip ahead to the most interesting bits. It says here, in 1938, Tolkien was in negotiations with Berlin publisher Rutten and Loening about creating a German language edition of The Hobbit. That is, until they asked for proof of Tolkien's Aryan descent due to Goebbels' regulations on Jews participating in German cultural activities. Tolkien objected, writing to his British publisher Stanley Unwin, and this quote is so good. You know when Tolkien writes stuff, it is so done. It is done so well. But this in particular I find so entertaining to read. It says, "I must say the enclosed letter from Rutten and Loening is a bit stiff. Do I suffer this impertinence because of the possession of a German name, or do their lunatic laws require a certificate of Irish origin from all persons of all countries?" And he doesn't even say Aryan, he says Irish. "Personally, I should be inclined to refuse to give any," and then he uses the German word Bestätigung, I think is how you pronounce that, "although it happens that I can, and let a German translation go hang. In any case, I should object strongly to any such declaration appearing in print. I do not regard the, in parentheses, probable absence of all Jewish blood as necessarily honorable, and I have many Jewish friends, and should regret giving any color to the notion that I subscribed to the holy, pernicious, and unscientific race doctrine. You are primarily concerned, and I cannot jeopardize the chance of a German publication without your approval. So I submit two drafts of possible answers." The article says, "The first of the two drafts Tolkien mentioned ignored the request, but the second eloquently chastised Rutten and Loening for asking. Thank you for your letter." This is his quote. "I regret that I am not clear as to what you intend by Irish. I am not of Aryan extraction, that is Indo-Iranian, as far as I am aware. None of my ancestors spoke Hindustani, Persian, Gypsy," and of course that was a phrase at the time that was okay, but we've moved on from that, "or any related dialects. But I am to understand that you are inquiring whether I am of Jewish origin. I can only reply that I regret that I appear to have no ancestors of that gifted people." Notice that he says this. "I can only reply that I regret to appear to have no ancestors of that gifted people. My great-great-grandfather came to England in the 18th century from Germany. The main part of my descent is therefore purely English, and I am an English subject, which should be sufficient. I have been accustomed, nonetheless, to regard my German name with pride, and continue to do so throughout the period of the late regrettable war in which I served in the English army. I cannot, however, forbear to comment that if impertinent and irrelevant inquiries of this sort are to become the rule in matters of literature, then the time is not far distant when a German name will no longer be a source of pride. Your inquiry is doubtless made in order to comply with the laws of your own country, but that this should be held to apply to the subjects of another state would be improper, even if it had, parentheses, as it has not, any bearing whatsoever on the merits of my work or its sustainability for publication, of which you appear to have satisfied yourselves without referencing to my Abstimmung. And Abstimmung means ancestry. So clearly he's wielding some of his language against them to show that he is smarter than they would assume. Now, this article finishes by saying it's unclear which letter was sent, but regardless, the deal didn't go through. 3 years later, Tolkien would express his disdain for the Nazis in a letter to his son Michael. Quote, I have in this war a burning private grudge against that ruddy little ignoramus Adolf Hitler, ruining, perverting, misapplying, and making forever accursed that noble northern spirit, a supreme contribution to Europe, which I have ever loved, and tried to present in its true light. And The Hobbit wouldn't be translated into German until 1957. During those interim years, it's unclear if anyone accused him of, quote, banning the German language. So good, so well done. And you can clearly see here in this, not only the description of the article, but his words specifically, that he truly valued the history of these people, of their culture, their language, all of those things. He held all of that in high regard. But what he did not have respect for was the authority and power who were using pseudoscientific ways of denying people their rights and taking their land or their themselves, their lives, any of that. And I think this is a warning. This is a warning from history. This is a warning from our favorite author, someone who created their own worlds, who understood the way that evil can pervade humanity in subtle ways, and the way that power can corrupt, that this could happen again, and that we need to be aware of those signs. And it's not the Germans who were the bad guys. It was this specific group who used rhetoric and manipulation to get their way, and that can happen anywhere, in any culture, at any time. And it has over and over again. So there you go. Tolkien in Germany. I hope you've enjoyed this slightly different kind of episode. I hope my audio sounded okay. And I'm not going to be able to do a bonus episode this week. Hopefully this was enough, interesting enough to kind of fill both the regular episode and the bonus episode. But thank you again to everybody who supports this show. I will be back home this next week doing some more Hobbit stuff, digging into that as usual. And I look forward to talking with you again very soon. If you want to check out the Patreon, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast, you can subscribe on there. You can sign up for free. Take a look at all the cool pictures I got from this really cool monastery and comment on the episode. Let me know what you think. And of course, you can leave a 5-star review and all that. I'll read those out on the future episodes, which I'll catch up with next week. But I hope you're all doing well, and I'll see you soon.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us. And it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.